Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 435, recorded October 20th, 2024.
And today we're doing Star Trek Ongoing issue number 24 and The Defiant Ongoing issue number 19. I think these came out in September of 2024.
Yep. The parallel stories continue that we think is going to come together again at some point, but they're parallel.
Yeah, well, they gave us the hint. It's going to, they're going to come together in something called the Lore Wars.
The Lore Wars, yes.
So we do got good that one to look forward to next year.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Although it's funny, it's taken so long
to do another crossover.
Well, to do the Lore Wars, because right. I mean, well, the events that happened in the last 2022 issue. Where Lore or some, well, whatever, the big universe ending explosion happens. So,
right. Yeah. Anyway. You would think that the crossover would happen right after that, but it looks like we got a couple more months. They're going to have exactly another little mini series, I think.
Yeah. So somehow they're going to resolve the ending of the universe. And I mean, it's the ending of the universe. I mean, parallel dimensions, the heck with that. I mean, as near as I can tell, it's going to end too.
Anyway, that's what they said last issue.
It's a little, yeah. Anyway, we'll right. see.
We'll talk more about that here in a second, because that is a big plot point of this week's issue.
Exactly. So,
but shall we do Defiant first this time?
Sure.
Since they're not really crossed over.
You do that.
All right, so this is Defiant number 19, entitled The Stars of Home number 3. The writer was Christopher Cantwell. The artist is by Angel Unzeta. Colorist by Marissa Louise. Letterer, Clayton Cowles. Design and production, Neil Yutaki. Group editor, Heather Antos. Editorial assist, Cassandra Jones. And at the back of the book, they show us three covers. Cover A is by Angel Unzeta. And it has a big old Miles O'Brien head. And then kind of in the front of him and towards the bottom, we see a really nice painting of the Defiant. So I do like that cover. Cover B is by Justin Mason. He did the art. And the colors is by Charlie Kirchhoff. And it shows Worf holding two batliths. And he's got his arms crossed like almost Wolverine style so that the blades are going perpendicular with his body. So kind of interesting way to hold batliths. And then there's a retail incentive cover by Deacon Shalvey. And it has, like, in the background, we see the Romulan logo with the two planets and the talons. And then in front of that, we see Sela. And then below her, we see Spock. Looks like he's meditating inside of a little dark cave. So the story starts kind of where the last one left off, with Miles aboard the Defiant. And he's talking to his new holo navigator, and they are sharing some colorful language back and forth. It seems that the program is picking up some of his saucy phrases from his logs. They're heading towards Worf's location, which, as you remember, he's on a farming planet where they're about to be attacked by the Romulans. But Miles's ship, the Defiant, is brought out of warp suddenly by Dr. Bashir, who's aboard a shuttlecraft. Bashir tells his friend that Section 31 has requested that Miles does not go help Worf out. And he says he doesn't really give a reason, but it's some sort of cloak and dagger Section 31 stuff. Meanwhile, on the planet Antera, which is where Worf is, he's enlisting the natives there to join his fight. Also, Ro and B'Elanna are bonding while they're fixing the Hirogen craft. And we see that the captured Romulan leaders have decided to do whatever's needed to be done to get free. And that they both know that Revo has no plans of actually saving them and bringing them alive back to Romulus. Meanwhile, on Rator 3, Revo, who again is Sela's dad, who's now acting Praetor, is hatching some more schemes. And he has his daughter, Sela, who is now acting head of the Tal Shiar, tailed by some of his lackeys. Spock is in prison there on Rator 3, and he learns from some Romulans that they tried to cloak their own star, and somehow it went awry, and now they know that the Romulus star system is about to go supernova. Sela breaks Spock out of prison, but they're both captured at gunpoint by the appointed lackeys. She asks Spock what he learned, and all he can say is that she's not going to like the answer. Meanwhile, back on Antera, a single Romulan ship has arrived, and B'Elanna and Ro take their cobbled-together ships up to greet it. While they are dodging some torpedo attacks, the Romulans launch a fighter craft that they call the Snakehead. We can only assume that either the Snakehead or the torpedoes will finally take out our favorite crew, but we'll have to wait until next issue to find out. To be continued.
Ooh. Cool. Very cool. I love the reveal they have of what really caused the exploding star wave that was the main driver of the 2009 movie.
Right. I don't know. I still like the countdown version, that it was some pocket of gas or something that they were mining and it set off a chain reaction. That was right. Kind of blowing up all the stars, not just one.
Yeah, well, I don't remember the pocket of gas thing, but I do remember the fact that it wasn't the Romulan star that exploded. It started in some other solar system.
Yeah, and then it was,
and just... then it eventually reached the Romulan solar system.
Exactly.
So this is revisionism to some degree, yes. But the idea that they're tying the whole thing in to the Dominion War is pretty cool.
Yeah, but it made no sense.
Although it is revision. I mean, it's revisionism.
They're cloaking their star system because they fear that the Dominion is going to win the war.
Yes.
But just because you cloak your star system, it's still there.
Doesn't mean people don't have the coordinates.
And they still know where it is.
From star charts?
Right, exactly. It's like when I look up in the sky and suddenly there's a star missing, I think I know where I know where Romulus is. Yeah, it made no sense to me.
Yeah. Don't try to think about this too much. Don't think about it too. Well, it's like the 2009 movie, right? It's like, don't think about it too hard, little one. Just let the narrative shower you. Just go with it. Yes. Let it run over your head. Yes. Yeah. I wrote in my notes, retcon alert. Retcon alert.
Yeah, and isn't this like the third version? Because in the Picard miniseries, didn't they have another reason why the star was going to go supernova?
I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I think you're right.
So they just... Every time they hit reboot, I guess they're like, "Oh, we gotta explain what's going on with Romulan."
He's right, and in most cases, they retcon it in a way that's a little bit more believable than what they did in the 2009 movie, which is really, if you spend any time at all thinking about it, it makes no sense. Anyway,
right.
So I love seeing Narex, Snakehead fighter from Picard.
Is that where it's from? Okay.
Yep. So that's I think that was the name of the character. N something. The Romulan guy.
Right. The commander guy.
So was he was a commander?
Okay. I don't know. He's the one commanding the ship,
he and
right?
His sister, right?
So that's the guy from season one of Picard? It's supposed to be the same guy? Oh, okay.
Well, okay, hold on. Hold on. Hold on a second. Let's back up. It's the ship. It's the ship. It's the model of ship. I'm not saying actually all Narek's right. Snake.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
I'm just saying that's the it's the model of ship. So the class of ship, whatever.
You're talking about the little fighter, not the little big fighter. Ship. Yeah, okay.
I don't remember the big ship being that. I don't remember it. Well, I've never seen it before that I recall. I mean, the main thing is I like the snakehead ship from Picard, and now I'm seeing it again, so I kind of like that. Mm.
It looks like a Cylon fighter to me.
A little. Yeah, so it actually almost looks like the Batwing from Christopher Nolan's third movie. It just looks like it's almost like a bat. Although the wings obviously are too short, but it just looks like I just like the look.
Hmm. I'd rather see the scorpion from
the scorpion
Nemesis. No, I said I would have rather seen the scorpion from Nemesis because that would have fit more in the
time frame of this story. Right. Okay, yeah.
No, I said it looked like a Cylon fighter from Battlestar Galactica, the classic one.
That's what you called it. Yeah, that's a little like that, especially from the front. So it doesn't really have wings per se, but it does go out a little bit into. Yeah. The original one, definitely not the reboot.
Right, definitely not the reboot.
No. Battlestar. Anyway, it was kind of interesting they chose to reuse that particular one for this particular scene. And I really didn't think of it as a fighter. I just thought of it as a small cloaked ship somebody could take. But apparently it's a fighter, or at least it's sure acting like a fighter.
Well, was it uncloaked? Was it there and cloaked, or was it like deployed from the ship? I thought he
in
said
Picard
deployed.
It was cloaked. I'm talking about Picard.
Okay. Wow.
And then real. I mean, it attacked the well. What's Rios's ship? Well, whatever. Whatever Rios's ship is, the name is. I forgot what the name is.
Yeah, I forgot too.
Anyway, but I just thought of it as a normal ship. I wasn't thinking of it as a fighter per se, but it's small like a fighter. So okay, fine.
Right,
and it's definitely acting like a fighter in this one, in this comic book issue.
Yeah, and they launched it from the mothership. So.
From the ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So a lot like a Cylon fighter. Good point.
Exactly. Anyway, so that was plus, cool. If that canopy is the cockpit, then it has to be pretty small. Maybe like shuttlecraft sized.
Oh, it's small. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they actually showed Narek or whatever walk into it from the back in Picard and go into the cockpit. It's not that big.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't remember.
Anywho, yeah, it's got a hatch in the back. Kind of like a shuttlecraft. Yeah. Or like a next gen shuttlecraft. Yeah, that cover that showed the way Worf is holding his two batlets. I agree with you. You commented that you've never seen it like that before, and neither have I. And when I'm looking at it, I almost had a hard time seeing where Worf's hands were.
But, I know, right? Because your eyes start playing tricks on you.
Yeah. I mean, it almost looked like he had four hands, but it's like, no. There's the two hands.
Right.
And I thought it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks cool. You know, different. Definitely a Wolverine type pose, I think. Just like.
Yeah, kind of.
Blades across his face or beside his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I don't think he's going to win any fights fighting with these two at the same time.
No, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, does it? I mean, the idea of like fighting with a full sword in your right hand or whatever your dominant hand is, and then like a smaller defensive sword or like a shorter blade or something as a second weapon, that's fine. But two right. big batlets like this, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And the first cover, I agree, that's a great cover.
Yeah, it's really good.
A great drawing, a great angle on Defiance, and the guy did a pretty good job on O'Brien's face.
Miles, yeah. Yeah, I didn't really care for the retail incentive one, though. Just looks kind of weird.
Well, quite frankly, I didn't think Worf's face looked that good on the second one either, the cover B. And then definitely Sela's face looks kind of
flat.
Basic.
Yeah.
Flat. Low detail. Yeah. But, yeah, that's my least favorite. That retailer incentive one.
So the beginning part with Miles and Bashir, did you feel a little, I don't know, anticlimactic that, oh, you know, last issue we were like, oh, Miles is going to come in the thick of it. Bashir's the one that sent him the info. He's got a hologram first officer or navigation officer. And then all we get is Bashir showing up. Oh, you know, mom said we can't go, you know, or something like that. It's just like, oh, that was not where I thought that storyline was going to go.
Yeah, me too. I mean, when I first saw, oh, of course, Miles is going to go, you know that.
Right.
And then Bashir is probably going to go with him. But when you first see Bashir and they're having their conversation stuff, and it's like, what? Aren't you the one that put Miles on this thing in the first place? And then eventually Bashir actually says, oh, and he cops to that and say, oh, yeah, they said that was a mistake on my part. It's like, oh, okay. Okay, that's, you know, at first I was like, wait a minute. Bashir put him on this quest, and now he's saying don't go? Anyway, so at least they acknowledged it. I was ready for a rant. And it's like, oh, it took my rant from me in my comments.
So I want to make a comment about ever since the Paramount Plus universe started, mm-hmm. they've been bringing in more spicy language here in the books, and then they often, you know, just blur it out with, you know, just random symbols and stuff, but you know what they're saying. Mm-hmm. I kind of go back to when I was a kid, and I remember reading like the DC first run of Star Trek books, and I remember when they would use the word damn, I was like, oh my goodness, this is so grown up, and I'm... I'm so mature because I'm reading a book that has, you know, damn in it. And now if a kid was reading this, it'd be like, oh, this is so tame. They use much worse language in the show itself.
Yeah.
It's just weird how it kind of gives you a snapshot of what our censorship has changed over the years and what is and isn't acceptable to the youngins.
Well, yeah. I mean, censorship is one thing, but yes, what kind of language is okay to use in a mixed audience? Things have gotten a lot looser.
Yeah. So are the new shows rated TVMA or are they just rated TV PG-13?
That's a good question. I really don't know.
Yeah, I really don't ever pay attention.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it, okay, so in Picard, when, what was it? Was it Ichab? Was that his name?
Oh, yeah.
When they were, like, removing his eye and stuff and or whatever they were doing, it's like, that's TVMA, baby. That was rough. I wasn't liking that. That was a bit too graphic for my taste.
But even in the first season when, like, the Klingons are... eating the Shinjo's people.
Well,
didn't they imply that they were eating them?
Yeah, well, by the end of Discovery season one, I think it was at the end. Yeah, she was eaten. I mean, they said they, you know, she was. I thought that was the stupidest freaking thing in the world, by the way, too. When Burnham and the captain, no security detail, beam over to the Klingon ship, and then Captain Giorgio ends up getting killed,
Right.
and then they end up and she then Michael has to get back to the ship and leaves the body, and then they end up eating her. It's like,
Right.
ah,
Right. Yeah.
but it
So.
didn't show anything that I recall, except maybe an empty uniform.
Yeah, I
But
don't remember.
it so it all was all in your mind. It's like, oh God damn, I liked her.
Yeah, I'm just saying the audiences are different now, I guess.
Yeah.
When you don't have to worry about sponsors and who's gonna sell you commercial time.
When you don't have to worry about censorship,
Right.
basically. Or that, you know, in the South, they're not going to show your episode because it shows a Kirk kissing on Uhura
Right,
under
right.
duress. Yeah. In some ways it's bad, in some ways it's good. It's like
Right.
I, you know, it's a mixed bag.
It
But
is.
you can go overboard. I mean, the Romans used to do the Colosseum fights, right? And they would literally rip people to shreds with lions. You know, lions would rip people to shreds and eat them.
Right.
And I don't, were there any kids in the audience? Maybe,
Of course.
probably.
Yeah, 100%.
So societal norms shift over the years.
Right. So, anyways, it was every time they say a curse word here in these books, it just again brings me back to when I was reading those DC ones as a kid. Having my mind corrupted back then. So back to the book. I kind of kept it out of the synopsis, but the Praetor finds out or acknowledges that he's always known that the head of the Tal Shiar is actually a spy working with the Federation. Well, that was kind of interesting and didn't really go anywhere in this book. So hopefully in the next book it will. But did it look like he killed him? Did he actually kill him?
So that was the Praetor that killed
Yeah.
the, okay, or at least was choking him, because
Yeah, choking the
those
Tal Shiar
guys,
guy.
right? So I gotta say, they look in this book, the artwork, they look really similar. I had difficulties telling the difference between the two of them. But yeah, that was quite a surprise. And the reason he went over is because he's got some sickness or something that he thinks the Federation have a chance of curing more than the Romulans.
Right.
Was that it? I think that was the excuse.
That was the excuse.
Yeah,
And
unexpected.
he's like, but it's like weird because he's like, yeah, I've always known you were doing it, but here I'm going to start choking you out. And, now you're going to act mad about it when you say you've known about it for
Exactly.
years.
Exactly.
I don't know where this is going to go. But if he did actually
I don't
kill
know
him,
either.
then it's going to be like, well, that was really weird.
Well, but exactly. So, I mean, so the Praetor knew about it, but didn't do anything purposely because he wanted to somehow turn it to his own purposes at the right time. And since I guess he must have figured there is no right time, so now I'm going to kill you.
I guess, I don't know.
And, I kind of wonder about the ability. I mean, wouldn't you think, unless, of course, I guess everybody in Romulan society, or most everybody, has martial arts training or whatever, hand-to-hand combat training, whatever. But
Right.
wouldn't you think somebody who's the head of the Tal Shiar would probably be better at killing people than a politician?
You would think so, yeah.
Yeah. So wouldn't you think he'd be, I mean, unless he's ill,
Yeah,
his
he is
illness has
sick,
weakened
so
him?
maybe. Yeah, good point.
I don't know. I was just kind of wondering how the politician is able to take out the head of the spy organization.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Speaking of spy organizations, can I just mention something in the message from Julian to Captain Frears of Section 31? It makes it very clear that Julian is not a member of Section 31 currently, but they want him to join. So it's very, I mean, doesn't mean at least in a series of books, which may not be taken as gospel. Isn't Julian in Section 31? And then he ends up exposing it at the end of the book series.
Yeah, that was the book series that's now not canon anymore. So
Okay. So
I guess in this universe he never did join.
Okay. So interesting. Interesting how he has this relationship with them still.
Well, yeah, remember I don't think he joins Section 31 until after Nemesis, right? Because when Pocket Books reboots when they rebooted the novel continuity after Nemesis, that's when he joins. Mm-hmm. And this takes place before Nemesis, so I guess that could still end up being canon. But
could still happen.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I doubt it.
Kind of interesting. Yeah, which is another thing. Okay, so he's not officially part of Section 31. So screw it. I mean, he's going to go off with O'Brien.
Right.
On the Defiant or something. It's like, why not? I mean, he's not a member of Section 31. He's a member of Starfleet. So,
Yeah, my number one problem with that whole scene, though, is space is big, right? No matter where even if you know where they're starting from and ultimately going to be able to fly and somehow intercept them in the exact path so that you can bring them out of warp is nuts. There's no way, because
unless there was some tracking device on the Defiant that they don't know about,
I don't know. But it just seems weird because they're even like changing course. They're like, all right, we're gonna go around the Romulans, and then Miles is like, no, let's just go straight through, you know, shortest path. And then she changes her trajectory and then immediately is like stopped by this magic shuttle that can, you know, bring people out of warp. I call BS on that.
Yeah. And is this magic shuttle got a cloaking device or something? I mean, because the Defiant had no idea it was there. I mean, if they got that close, ship looks like, now they just show it on the view screen. They don't say that it uncloaked. Right. Okay, so it's a small shuttle, the likes of which you see on the Defiant, which is purposely very small so it can fit into a relatively small mothership, the Defiant class.
Yep.
So why do they keep on using those dorko little shuttles? I mean, wouldn't you think that if Julian's doing this, unless there's like another ship out there that he was on and then he took this shuttle out, you would think that operating at a long distance, you'd need a warp capable shuttle, more like the bigger shuttles that are on the Enterprise E.
Right.
Which are pretty roomy inside, apparently. I mean, a little closer to, you know, it's almost as big as a runabout. But the main point is it's long range, warp capable. Why are they using this thing? This design, which is small, dinky. And is that thing even warp capable?
It must be. And it's able to break out other people out of warp. So it has like an interdiction field or something.
It has even more equipment on it. Exactly.
I don't care for. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that was my number one, like, this makes no sense. And then I was like, well, maybe it's like a Section 31 special ship or something. And then you turn the page, and then now you're reading that he's not even part of Section 31. And I'm like, well, then where did he get this ship and all this stuff? Just too many questions.
Well, obviously it is a Section 31 shuttle, or at least it's got that interdiction. I mean, I don't remember a Federation ship ever having the ability to bring a ship out of warp.
No.
So this seems like very specialized equipment that not everybody has.
Right.
So I do agree with the idea that it's a Section 31 ship, but why a dinky little thing like that? Anyway.
Oh, well, just sets up. Hopefully it'll be answered, and we'll know next week when we when we read the next one.
One last thing. And this kind of relates to something that you and I were speaking about before we started recording. Sela, near the end, snaps the neck of the guard that was abusive towards Spock. And what I want to know is, in the movies, in TV shows, in this comic book, why is it that you can so easily snap somebody's neck and automatically they're dead?
Mm.
Because if you snap somebody's neck, yes, you snap their vertebrae. But unless by snapping it, you've severed their nerves and things, it's like, why would that kill you?
Right.
I mean, you still have air going back and forth, right? I mean, I assume your windpipe is not gone. I mean, you still got arteries going. I mean, veins are flexible. It's like, why is it that snapping somebody's neck automatically kills them? So I think what's more likely the possibility is you snap somebody's neck, they fall to the ground, and they're screaming like crazy, and they're not dead. Anyway, my comment.
Yeah, well, that makes it a very different kind of show. You're definitely going to get that TVMA after that once you just have a bunch of people like screaming and I can't feel my fingers.
I want to see a show that's more realistic.
God.
You snap the neck, they're falling to the ground, they're screaming, my God, you snapped my neck. You know, I want to see something more realistic.
Anyway. I don't know if I want that in my action movies. Just have like, them be dead move on. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And I want people to be able to shoot a barrel of oil and have it explode, no matter how unlikely that is to actually happen.
Exactly, right. And what is it? What was it, an oxygen tank in the shark's mouth? Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, for Jaws.
That's just a bomb.
Now, mind you, that's compressed. That's compressed air.
Right. But it's not going to explode.
So
I'm talking about
a flammable. I'm talking about.
No, I know what you're talking about, but it's all the same thing. You shoot a fire extinguisher. You shoot a barrel. You shoot.
Yeah, but yeah. Typically, barrels of oil are not compressed. But yes, yeah. It's all stretching things.
Right.
Anyway.
And you can fall off buildings, and as long as there's an awning at the end, you just mm-hmm. walk away. John Wick style.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. You ready to go on or you still got more?
Yeah, let's go. All right. And this is from Star Trek 2022. And this is issue number 24 titled Pleroma Part 6. So interesting that it's still called Pleroma. So we apparently have not left the Pleroma saga, even though we just had a big universe explosion. Which you would think would end a story, but no, our heroes are still alive and kicking. Okay. Published date, September, as Donovan had mentioned earlier. Creative team, writer, Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. Artist, Megan Levins. Colorist, Lee Lowridge. Letterer, Clayton Cowles. Design and production by Neil Yataki. Group editor, Heather Antos. Editorial assistant, Cassandra Jones. Okay, so we got three covers. Cover A features a, in my opinion, a fraudulent cover, as it shows the Theseus exploding to little bits. But as we will see later in the story, the ship does no such thing, which is exactly what you said would happen, Donovan. So this is a mystery misrepresentation, I tell you. False advertising. Art is by Megan Levins and colors by Lee Lowridge. Cover B features the head of the king of the multiverse, Lore, with a crown of celestial bodies and a space background. Lore's eyes are glowing and he has a mischievous, self-satisfied smile. The art's by Raza. Single name. Retailer incentive cover presents a stained glass motif with Sato in the center. Around the outside, we see a Tholian's head, a Klingon bird of prey, Charlie X, who is dead at this point, by the way, and we see a Metron, who also is dead at this point. The Metrons are dead, too. Quick comment. The narrative appears to be well beyond Pleroma, and all of these godlike beings are dead, so this cover seems a bit of a leftover with three godlike beings being on it. Okay, just a little comment. Art by J.J. Lendl. And it's a nice cover. Korath's log reminds the reader that his last great invention before his untimely death was an anti-tachyon bomb capable of unraveling space and time at a fourth dimensional level. And of course, fourth dimension is time, I think, right? I think time is the fourth dimension. That the bomb used by a mad entity such as that android Lore can only result in the end of everything. The only thing left would be a master. And of course, that master would be Lore. With a look of unparalleled joy and achievement, Lore holds his arms out as his bird of prey explodes above him. The end of everything has begun. Meanwhile, the Theseus, with Tom Paris at the helm and Dr. Crusher at the con, desperately tries to stay ahead of the quickly expanding explosion, the likes of which no living thing has ever seen before. Tom states that they are in a fully contained pocket dimension outside the galactic barrier, but even if they stay in front of the shockwave, they literally have nowhere to go. Sisko, in the coolest warp-capable shuttle ever, is able to smash his way into the Theseus's main shuttle hangar. Dr. Crusher states that Wesley gave them the information to get them into this place, but now they need a destination. Crusher tells Scotty to prepare to activate the warp drive, which, of course, Scotty protests against. Crusher orders T'Lyr to get a lock on the Guardian of Forever. And this is not the old man, but she says the real one. T'Lyr says he has a lock on it, and for now it's resisting the obliteration wave, but not for much longer. They see a hole in space-time ahead of them, and Crusher tells Tom to set a course towards it and thread the needle. Meanwhile, Sisko has exited the shuttle and made his way to where the orb was placed in the Theseus. Scotty activates the warp drive and Tom starts threading. The ship shakes almost to pieces. Lieutenant Ducheny is blown back by an exploding console and Dr. Crusher jumps down to render aid. Data's head states they have reached an inflection point where their probability of imminent destruction is limitless. Cascading system failures are happening all over the ship. T'Lyr/Tandela starts to do something trippy with his control panel and starts saying the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one. Shields come back up. They are not destroyed. And Data says something about the shields being at 400% capacity. T'Lyr is on his knees, but not unconscious. It is not clear whether Tandela is there anymore, but whoever this is, they have a nice moment with Sato. Ah. Data goes on shipwide and tells the crew the life as they knew it has just been changed forever. Pleroma was destroyed by his brother Lore. The same fate may be happening now to the place they call home. All they can do now is to put their faith in the hands of the gods. In front of the orb, Sisko says she understands what Data is saying and starts to interact with his mother. He says he will return to her and the rest of the prophets, but first he must save his family. She turns away from him, asking him if he truly thinks he can wield the power of the prophet's technology. Sisko says he must try. He's damned if he will stop trying now. The ship seems to have arrived somewhere. As Sisko looks out of the ship into a weird kind of space he has never seen before and calls up to the bridge. They report that most decks are checking in, saying things are fine. Tom Paris just stormed off the bridge and said, "Fluidic!" To be continued.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
Fluidic space.
Indeed. Indeed, fluidic space. And where do we see that before?
Voyager.
Indeed. And who was in fluidic space?
The species 8329 or something like that?
8472, yes.
Wow. Did you look it up or you knew it off the top of your head?
Oh, hell, I didn't know that. Are you kidding? I had to look it up.
So I was close.
Oh, you had four digits, which is closer than I would have gotten. I just knew it was some species with numbers. I didn't.
Just numbers, yeah.
It had so that's the Borg designation, I think.
Right, right, yeah. And and they can make Boothby. I remember that. Because Janeway shows up on Starfleet Academy, and come to find out it's all just the species, like, recreating it and stuff like that with Boothby. You remember that part?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I always liked it when
that was in the Voyager episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had Ray Walston in there.
Yep, right. My favorite Martian.
Exactly right.
Poop deck pappy.
Cool. A poop deck pappy. the Popeye the Sailor Man.
Right. The movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. So this whole issue is just asking too much of the reader, in my opinion. Suspended disbelief. Really?
Takes you out of it.
Suspended disbelief, out the wazoo, and I think in the need to always go bigger, 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 I think they've gone too far.
I agree. And I think we mentioned this last issue, but it really reminds me of like the season finales of Doctor Who, like when, especially when it was Stephen Moffat, just you know, he builds it up. You have a great story for the whole season. And then you have this like season finale, which is so over the top, you know, that you're just like, okay, now I did not like that. And it kind of makes the whole season worse because it's hard to believe the whole universe was recreated perfectly from Matt Smith's brain. So when this storyline just seems so much like that. Okay, so yeah. Lore is going to recreate the whole universe in his image, and I have no idea what's going on. But it just, to me, it just reeks of that kind of over-the-top silliness.
Yeah. A lot of techno babble going.
Yeah, I really thought when they were heading towards the Guardian of Forever that they were going to somehow go back in time and stop it from happening, but then I was like, I don't know if I would like that either.
No. Okay, so why is fluidic space not part of the multiverse or whatever? The
universe? Yeah,
it's just another dimension, right?
That's the way I took it, yeah.
So why does fluidic space existing unharmed when all the other dimensions appear to be at, you know, being destroyed by Lore's bomb?
No clue.
I don't know. But I hope they explain it reasonably in the next issue.
Right. Yeah, both of these issues today really feel like I hope they explain it better later, because I'm confused. Maybe I just need it spelled out for me, but I'm not following where you're going.
Right. Yeah.
Which is really unfortunate. I agree with you. I mean, I've liked these stories up until both of these issues were just kind of like meh for me.
Yeah.
Maybe more for you, because it sounds like you really did not like this one.
It's fine. It's all Star Trek. It's all Star Trek to me. But it's just really asking a lot of the reader to go along with all this. And like the Doctor Who examples, if they don't have a decent payoff at the end that is plausible, at least a little plausible, it really just becomes disappointing. So we'll see what they come up with.
Right. And to just bring up, you know, random stuff that they're doing without explanation is what did T'Lor do to create the shields that somehow got it up to 400%? Because he did it, he's like, okay, they're finally gone. I lost my family. I'll never get them back. You know, so was he somehow like holding on to them in some interdimensional way, some godlike way, and then he released that power to boost the shields? I was not clear at all.
No. But that, yeah, because I thought the whole godlike being race was gone already. She was the last one. That's what I thought before. So, so your point you just made is like, well, yeah, well, okay. So yeah, so somehow are they not gone, and somehow their power was used to save the ship? I don't know.
Or maybe this was what caused them to die in the first place. I don't know, because he keeps talking about how time is going backwards or whatever. That.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It wasn't clear.
So the explosion is what killed off the rest of her race. Who we haven't seen since the beginning of this storyline. I mean, she supposedly had been alone. I mean, she talked about what, Aelborn? Is that her husband or father?
Yeah,
that I had the impression that he's been dead a while.
Yeah, they've all been dead for a long time.
Okay.
But they kept acting like it was something Kalis did with the Godkiller thing, you know, had some sort of ripple effect that killed them a long time ago, even though Kalis just did it.
Oh, right.
But maybe it wasn't what Kalis did. Maybe it was what T'Lor did here that had the ripple effect. I don't know. I mean, I'm not clear. I'm just kind of like making up my own explanations as to what he meant when he said, "Well, they're all gone now. I can't ever bring them back." Or was he talking about the other gods who he was trying to get to? He was asking them to help him bring them back. I don't know.
Or was it? Or did he use Tandela? He, the Vulcan, used Tandela. Or is Tandela still there? You know, when they do the needs of the many versus the needs of the, and then you turn the page, at least I think it was a page turner, but you go to the next panel anyway, and it shows what looks like a ghostly image of Tandela somehow out in space behind the Theseus, and she says, or the one. So was Tandela the last of the Organians, the one that was sacrificed to save the ship, and now it's just T'Lor. There's no more Tandela. I don't know.
That's a good point. Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah,
but I thought that T'Lor was, she was T'Lor, that she took on the form of a Vulcan in Starfleet, not that she took over a Vulcan that already existed, Spotty.
There were never two entities. It was always just Tandela.
That's the way I always took it.
And then she took on the name T'Lor.
Right. So she could fit in better. Because she idolized Spock.
There goes that theory, if that's the case.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they'll explain it later.
So we got that for getting the ship back. But what got them into the fluidic universe? That was Sisko doing something with the orb?
He said that he'll go back to the prophets, but as long as
he's got to save his family.
Right.
Okay.
Which he brings up a good point. He mentions not only the Theseus ship, but also Jake and everybody on DS9. So
yeah,
he can't just save the Theseus. He has to save everybody. Go ahead.
Is that how the Federation is saved? Everything we know and love? Because obviously that has to happen.
Right.
So there's no way they're going to, unless they pull a Doctor Who. Yep, everything destroyed and I put it back together again.
Exactly.
And then you can continue having Star Trek adventures in a totally made up environment. Thank you, Cisco.
I think it would be really cool if this tied in to Coda and we find out that this was just one of those other universes that destroyed in the branches. Wouldn't that be a twist? Find out that you haven't been following the people you thought. Yeah.
Would it be a twist?
What a twist.
I mean, we have seen it before, haven't we?
Yep.
Yeah, pretty much that first Coda, the beginning of that first Coda book.
Right. Yeah.
The Enterprise, I think.
Yeah, right. Because like stepping over dead bodies and stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
And you're like, what's going on? Right. Yeah, that's right.
It sounds like we're not going to come back from this. What happened for next week? I don't know about this.
Anyways.
Oh, they're a different dimension. Got it.
Well, here in the book, they don't mention what the next title is, but I did look it up. And the next issue is titled When the Walls Fell, Part 1.
Ah, no more Pleroma.
Right. So does that give a clue, When the Walls Fell? It kind of sounds like that guy from...
John Cougar Mellencamp?
No, DeMarc or whatever, the one that where always speaks in...
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
He always speaks in, narratives or something, or
exactly, yeah. What is his name in the
it's
Picard episode?
It's DeMarc.
I think it's called DeMarc.
It's D something.
Yeah, close enough. So yeah, when I read that title, when the walls fell, I was like, oh, that sounds like something he said.
Exactly, or whoever that guy with the same species who was on Lower Decks. I do like that they brought back one of those guys. I do like that.
Right. So
I never quite got that episode. I mean, that original TNG episode with that.
Oh, yeah.
It was like I never quite fully got it. But then as time went on, I guess I got it. Okay, fine.
That's kind of how it's I weird. Feel about this issue. Just like I don't quite get it.
Yeah,
but anyway, so yeah.
But there are some beautiful drawings of the Theseus with various weird backgrounds.
Yeah,
there's a nice 2-page drawing of the Theseus going into that thing that kind of looks like a wormhole when they were chasing the Guardian forever.
Well, I think they're going inside the Guardian. Yeah, there's that shot where they're going into the Guardian, which is a 2-page spread. And then later there's another one.
Is it going into the Guardian or is it following the Guardian? Or
no, I think
it's going towards
in.
The Guardian.
Because he says thread the needle, so he's like going right through the hole.
Okay, but I didn't know it was a hole in the Guardian itself, but okay, sure. Sounds cool.
Yeah, it's a big donut in space.
It's a big donut. It looks like a Stargate tunnel, you know, they're jumping through a tunnel and it's like a roller coaster ride. Yay.
So in Stargate, they had big ones that you could fly ships through?
No. Well, normally it was just people going through, but the view you had as you're going through, or at least they insinuated the view you had, if you really had a view at all. I can't see how you'd have a view at all. But they visualized it with like like a tunnel that you're going through. That's
like the like the time tunnel that the TARDIS is in.
Yeah, like that kind of thing.
Right,
I remember. It's not a first, but in Stargate Atlantis, there are actually things. There are puddle jumpers. They call them puddle jumpers, and they do go. They're designed just big enough to go through a Stargate, and it's kind of like a shuttle.
Okay.
You ever seen anything from Stargate Atlantis?
I watched SG-1 when we did the Presents episode.
Sure.
That's the only part of the TV show I watched.
Okay.
But yes, these shots are good.
Yeah.
The artwork is good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do I have anything else to say?
I really don't. The covers. Let's talk about the cover real quick.
Okay.
The one with Lore's head exploding or whatever that is. It's so weird.
Lore's head exploding.
Is that what that is? Oh no, that's a crown.
It's a crown.
It's
a crown of planetary objects, of heavenly objects, moons. Planets, who knows what.
I thought it was his head like popping open and that stuff was spilling out. But you know, you're saying it's a crown of bubbles.
It's a crown. All right, I got you. At least I took it to be a crown.
No, I took it like his head was completely sliced open and it was like a little bit away from the scalp was a little away from the head and the stuff was just pouring out. Because again, I was thinking that, you know, he's about to rebuild the whole universe in his image. So this is the universe coming from his brain. That's the way I took the trailer. That's the way I took the cover.
Yeah, that could work. And it just happened to look vaguely crown-like.
And bubble-like, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you look closely, look closely, like zoom it in a bit and look at some of those bubbles, and they kind of look like planets.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, again, which is why I thought it was the universe being recreated from his brain, but
coming out of his head.
But I think the crown thing's more likely.
Well, that's the great thing about
none of
ours.
It's likely.
You can take it. You can take it many ways, multiple ways.
Oh, like that first cover that you love so much with the Theseus exploding. What is it? How does this make you feel? It makes Ken really mad.
It makes me feel violated, Donovan. Violated. Here I thought I was going to see it explode, but no.
You were lied to.
I was lied to. By the creators of this rag.
All right. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. I think I'm good, too.
So what are we doing next week anyway, Donovan?
Well, we get to continue Defiant, issue number 21. And no, I'm sorry, issue number 20. What? And Star Trek Ongoing 25.
Exactly.
So, cool. So we get to find out what happens in fluidic space.
There you go. So we've delayed recording long enough that we've got more books to cover. So that's great.
Right, so we don't have to put a Presents in there somewhere.
Bueno. Okay. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed it, those of you that have listened, and I hope you can join us on the next thrill-packed-ish episode of Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Later.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes. Or friend us on Facebook at first name, ST Comic, second name, Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.